If you're watching us on our Facebook or YouTube channel, you will see the bright and beaming faces of Michael Eddy and Katie McGee. It's the hour I've been looking forward to ever since I found out I was doing the 9 till noon show on a Friday. It doesn't happen half often enough as far as I'm concerned. Michael and Katie in studio with us. Both of you, very welcome indeed.
Hello, Donal.
It's good morning. Great speaking to you. Great. Michael, I'm going to ask you a question first.
Yes.
You are directing Cider Park, the latest play written by Kieran Kelly. Yeah. You had the auditions earlier this week. How did it go?
It went very well. I just sent a text message to somebody about 5 minutes ago from the kitchen here, and I just said, yeah, I'm just pulling the plug on something. It went very well, Donald. Thank you for
Excellent.
Asking.
I'm delighted.
One or two people have said, you know, the usual, which is fair enough, can't be there on Wednesday. Can you meet me next week? So we're keeping that side of things open. So it's going great, Donald. Thank you for asking.
I'm just going to give this a plug right from the off. I have had the chance to read the script. I have read it. It is an incredible piece of work. Kieran Kelly has outdone himself, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It is brilliant.
It's a lovely piece,
and
isn't it?
It's a gorgeous piece, and it's got a wonderful twist that you will not see coming.
No.
At all.
No.
And we will say no more than that, but I mean, I know it's on October 12th.
Yes.
In Aberdeen.
Yeah.
And that's the start of a process that will go on then to the
venues,
festivals, etc., etc. But this deserves to be seen, and it should be seen. And it's going to be an amazing piece of work, and I cannot wait to see this made real on a stage. But absolutely brilliant. Look out for that. It's called Cider Park.
Yes.
Written by Kieran Kelly, directed by Mr. Michael Lennon. It is going to be superb. Right. That's that done.
Michael, a bit of a, introduction to you there.
I came from reception, just in case anybody was wondering.
And also with us today, Katie.
Yeah. Indeed, right. And you know what? In my day-to-day life, who's more important to me, Michael Lennon or Katie McGee? Answers on a postcard, please.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to tell you who she is, but if you can guess who she is... believe you me, if there's one person we need to keep on our right side,
yes.
I'm not going to, as I say, who she is will remain a mystery.
And I have to say the same thing back. As much as I love you, Donald Kavanagh, I got to say, if I have to make a choice, no. Sorry, you're down the list. You're down the list, sorry. You're down the list.
Absolutely. Looking
well,
at
I wasn't fishing for that at all, but anyway, thanks very much.
Still true. I'm looking at both of your lists, and... both of you have the same cinema pick this week. So over to you, Katie, first. Both of you have started with It Ends With Us, which is in the cinema at the moment. It stars Blake Lively. It's the second film in the cinema that you'll see Blake Lively in. Well, you won't actually see her in the other one. She's masked. But this is... And we know Blake Lively is the wife of Ryan Reynolds, and she's in Deadpool and Wolverine, and it's very funny, and it's really great. This is very, very serious.
Yeah, it is, and it's different. It's a different take, obviously, than Deadpool and Wolverine. Myself and Michael and Fionnuala actually went to see it together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and interestingly, I think we went to see it. It was probably a week out at that stage, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was still its first, yeah.
But we couldn't even get seats together. It was so busy. It was like a Wednesday night, and the cinema was completely, completely packed.
Five seats left when the three of us arrived. And
exactly.
That was a good half hour.
Yeah, beforehand. Yeah. So it really, it's doing incredibly well. It is obviously the message in the movie is a really important one and a serious one. I think me and Michael agreed that we really enjoyed, well, when I say enjoyed it, we found it to be a powerful enough movie. The acting in it is very good, I think. It's quite clever, the way it's filmed. Certain scenes are quite, hidden, and you kind of get to understand that a little bit more later on in the movie as to why they've filmed it in such a way. And it does kind of go back and forth to, it's a film, as far as I'm concerned, my opinion, it's about generational trauma more so than abuse, right? So, it speaks more to that for me. Because it kind of speaks about trauma for a few of the different characters from different perspectives and what brings them to who they are and where they are today, and then when they come together and what consequently occurs. It's I found it to be very good. I thought Blake was very good in it, and oh my God, what's his Falcone?
The actor,
yeah,
the main guy.
The director as well.
Justin Baldoni.
Baldoni, yeah. Sorry, God Almighty. I thought I had that in my head because I've read so much, obviously, there's so much controversy
there
around
is.
It. But I'm also wondering, is that marketing or is it actual controversy? But anyway, the movie itself, I found it very good. I do know that there's mixed reviews. Some people find it quite... the message to be quite hidden or you know, or maybe muted. But I happen to think it is very clever in its manner because it speaks to more of a generational thing for all characters rather than a having a villain as such.
It is based on a book, which has been a very popular
Correct,
book.
Yeah,
and a
yeah.
lot of people who've read the book are saying the film is a very fair representation. Now, I have neither read the book nor seen the film, so I can't pass any judgment. But certainly it's getting talked about quite a lot. There was an interesting story in the papers earlier this week. I don't know if you saw this, Katie, but Blake Lively was doing interviews. And in the middle of one of the interviews, she broke away and started to promote her own skincare products. And there was a number of domestic violence organizations and other organizations were accusing her of, at best, tone deafness and, at worst, almost sabotaging the message of what was a serious film that they felt she was trivializing.
Yes.
Having presented this very serious and very thought-provoking film, she suddenly starts promoting her own skincare products in the middle of the interviews.
I happen to think my opinion on it is that she just doesn't interview terribly well. Do you know, like, I don't know if it's a nervousness or what, but like I've seen a couple of, like, they keep drawing on these older interviews that she did around the time of Gossip Girl and that kind of thing where she appears really quite rude. And very dismissive of whoever's the person interviewing her at times. And I don't know if it's social awkwardness or if it is that she is maybe perhaps she is, but it's just hard to tell. You know, like there hasn't really been much in the media about her. Usually it's about Ryan, her fabulous husband.
in fairness, very often, immediately, whenever Blake Lively gets mentioned, it's almost Ryan Reynolds' wife, Blake Lively. Is it a little unfair for us to be, you know, suddenly saying, oh, no, we're going to trust you in the limelight now and sort of slag you off? You know, that she's trying to forge her own way, and I suppose in forging her own way, she's trying to follow what her publicist and her PR advisors and everyone else is saying to her, and maybe she's getting mixed messages, and maybe she's trying to navigate her own way through this whole thing, because it is such a nightmare now, I suspect, for a celebrity who's being interviewed, because you can't say anything or you want to run the risk of saying something wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay in the cinema and go to a different film, and I must say the little boy in me who loves the big science fiction blockbuster cannot wait to see Alien Romulus. And we know when Prometheus came out, is Prometheus an alien movie? Isn't Prometheus an alien movie? Make up your own mind when it comes to all that. I mean, this is an alien movie. Michael, it's been a long, long time waiting for Alien Romulus. Is the wait worth it?
Yes, absolutely, categorically. I'm a huge fan of the franchise. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing the first one back in the very early days, some Saturday night on ITV when I was much too young to be watching it, and I loved it. And I've seen it numerous times since. And the story with the franchise is, of course, as diehard fans know, the first two movies are revered. Mm-hmm. Everything else is kind of patchy. There's two cuts of three, for instance. I've seen the director's cut is much better, but Prometheus for me was a huge disappointment. Alien Covenant back in 2017 was okay.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It was okay. This, going by the critics and by the audience response in the Rotten Tomatoes scores at the moment, the critic score is 81, the audience score is 86.
Right, that's fair enough.
Everybody's really happy with this. This, for them and for me, is a big return to form, going properly back to what you want from an Alien or / Aliens movie.
Yeah.
A group of characters go on board a space station. We're given very compelling reasons for empathizing with them and wanting them to succeed in their mission. They're a bunch of young kids. They're in a bad situation. But we can recognize the little foreshadowing here and there, and we know that they're heading into a very bad situation on this dark and massive space station. And that is the story. That's all you need to know going into it. You know the story of the Alien movies.
Yeah.
What I will say is fantastic cast in this. The lead actress in this, Kaylee Spaney, who's also in Civil War, another really great film this year. She's really, really on strong form this year. And for me, the movie was stolen by David Johnson, who plays... all these movies have a android. Michael Fassbender has been doing it for a couple of years. This guy is one of the coolest androids we've ever had in any franchise.
The coolest daughter?
He is... No. He's not. Okay, sorry, fair enough. Yeah, no, that's a great question.
That's a trick question.
That's a trick question, yeah. Trick question.
I'm in the wrong room.
Sorry, Kelly, we will get back to real life, I promise.
But he has a mixture of telling awful dad jokes constantly, and also being really badass cool, like watching him run down a corridor and get through a door it's really cool. The movie, I loved it. The visuals are amazing. No spoilers, but the space station, they're told when they arrive on it, they have like 48 hours. It's drifting into a belt around the planet, like there's debris or asteroids. So that's getting closer and closer the whole time, and they keep framing it outside the way. You know that they're getting closer and closer. This, the space station, it's always in darkness. There's loads of little nooks, crannies, where anything could be lurking. And it's what an Alien movie should be.
Is there a law of diminishing returns in that we've seen the previous Alien movies, so effectively we know what the alien looks like, so there can be no huge big reveal as to what the alien looks like. We sort of know, having been there before.
We know where we're going, I mean, when you count, when you include the four movies, the two and the two AVP, this is what, the ninth movie in the, am I right, in the franchise? So yeah, we're absolutely right. Yeah, there's no major surprises in terms of designs of creatures or anything like that. That's off the table. But I think what this director has done is cleverly figured out what else he can do to surprise us, what else he can do to shock us. And using the tropes that we're well familiar with, he manages a great job.
And it's probably fair to say that when it comes to Alien movies, at the heart of all of them is tension. At the heart of all of them is knowing that something's about to happen, but not quite knowing what that is. And it's that sense of...
Impending doom. Yeah, that works. That's what the foreshadowing does in this. And there's a good while before we get onto the station properly.
Yeah.
But when we're on the station, we see things that mean something to us before the characters do. And that's exactly what you're talking about. So we're like, uh-oh, I know where this is going. And those characters are just blindly wandering around. And we're like, okay, that's not going to go well.
Yeah, and a good director can use that. I always say when it comes to The Exorcist, what's the most frightening moment in The Exorcist? And to my mind, I'll tell you what it is. A phone rings. There's a moment of huge tension in The Exorcist. You're waiting for something really dramatic to happen with the child. You're waiting for something really strange to happen. What actually happens is, suddenly, really loudly, a phone rings. And it scares the bejeebers out of you.
Right.
It is the one thing you're not waiting for.
Yeah, okay.
And it's that sort of sense of you think, I know what's coming, I know what's coming. No, you don't. Bang. And it really gets to you.
Well, that's the secret of good horror, good tension, good comedy as well. It's paying off something you've set up, but in an unexpected way.
And we all love a jump scare. And we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. Katie, you want to talk about Presumed Innocent, which is on Apple TV at the moment. We're going to take a short break. Back after these. Now, we were speaking about jump scares and catching people off the hop. Let's switch the camera back on. And Michael and Michael and Katie have completely changed. We're joined in studio this morning by Isabel Rogers, who is chair of the Donegal Hospice, and also by Eddie Meenan, who is secretary of the Seven Gables Vintage Club, because there is a very important event taking place over the course of the weekend in Derry at Windmill View in Millennium. And I'm going to go over to our two guests. And first of all, Isabel, going over to you, tell us all about what's happening over this working weekend.
Well, this is a working weekend, and it's been held, and it was held last year, and they raised an amazing amount of 17 grand for the Donegal Hospice. And to be quite honest, Donal, I don't know how they managed it, because it was complete washout. But anyway, as I always say to people, your skin's waterproof. Get out there, you'll enjoy it no matter what. There's something there for everybody. And I would just like to take this opportunity to thank Eddie and his committee for doing this for Donegal Hospice. And the people of Donegal are very good to Donegal Hospice, and especially the St. Johnson people seem to be, they've had a a lot of fundraisers there for us in the last while. But I'm hoping that this will go well for them tomorrow and that people come out and support it and that, you know, the weather, please God, will pick up for it. But thanks to Eddie and them for doing this for us.
Absolutely. Eddie, this your secretary of the Seven Gables Vintage Club. Now, it doesn't specify vintage what. And as far as I can see from the posters and the promo material, we're talking everything from steam threshers to vintage cars.
That's right, Don. We're talking sort of like vintage tractor ploughing, grubbing, disking, vintage threshing mills, baling, steam engines. Then we have like vintage tractor displays, vintage lorry displays, vintage car displays. We have a special Ferguson display, and then we have also a Ferguson tractor build. What happens there is they'll have a small Ferguson tractor in pieces, and they build it,
mm-hmm.
and basically turn the key and it starts, hopefully.
And that takes a huge amount of skill, one suspects, particularly when you're building it in an outdoor setting with an audience.
Exactly.
I don't think I couldn't change a plug with an audience. Well, I couldn't change a plug without an audience, to be honest. Well, I used to be able to. I haven't changed a plug in about 25 years.
That's usually,
if any of us have.
Exactly. That's usually when something goes wrong, whenever somebody's watching.
Absolutely, it always is. And it's an important one, Isabel, because obviously the Donegal Hospital is providing a huge service right across the Northwest. And, you know, there is always fundraising to be done. There is always services to be improved. You have a fantastic building that's being augmented and that's being developed again. And there's more and more services being offered.
That's correct, Donal. We have the inpatient unit there, and we have that there for the last 23 years, and that's six single rooms and two apartments. So we'll be upgrading that now to six new apartments, and also other work within to upgrade the existing building, because you don't want a new build sitting there and the other, you know, the existing building not fitting in with it. So the plans are down there at the hospice. They're up on the wall. If anybody wants to call in to get a look at them, feel free. We'll show them to you. And it's just amazing what it'll look like after it's finished. Not forgetting the home care in the community. We have seven home care nurses that cover all of Donegal in the community. And that's to provide palliative care in the community. And then also in the unit, as well as end of life, we cover motor neuron, MS and COPD.
I always found it interesting. One of my favourite quotes, actually, when it comes to hospice came from the late Dr. Tom McGinley, who was so instrumental in founding the Foyle Hospice in Derry. And there used to be a phrase, such a facility was called a hospice for the dying. And someone used that phrase in front of Dr. McGinley. And his response is, no. It's not a hospice for the dying. It's a hospice for the living. And the emphasis very much is on the fact that, yes, life may be limited, end of life may be near, but there is still life. And as long as there's life, it's for living. And that life is going to be celebrated and that life is going to be promoted. This isn't a waiting room. This is very much an active place where people can live to the best of their ability.
That's right. And we need to look after the families too, because they're on the journey. But not alone that, Donal, we do have people that come in for respite and go home again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all about dying in the hospice. It's about, as you say, living in the hospice, mm-hmm. and they do go home and they would come in many a time into us. Like, so, you know, also we look after children in the community with life-limiting conditions. Mm-hmm. So we have 13 children on our books at the moment, and we have had them so we've been doing that for the last 15 years, which people wouldn't probably be aware of, but we do have the children as well.
Eddie, I mean, obviously, from your own point of view, you're anxious to support the hospice and you have been doing so in the past. An event like this, it's got a dual purpose. Yes, people are going out to support the hospice, but they're also going out to have a really interesting experience and seeing things that they mightn't necessarily be able to see.
Yes, that's right. Well, it's a great family day out. You know, we try and put on a show, an event for everybody. Like, we have amusements there. We have a supervised children's play area. We'll also have the likes of stalls, auto jumble, tools, old signs, craft stalls. And yes, it's, you know, it's definitely you know, it's a great weekend. Just hope the weather's kind.
Hopefully so. Now, I know that trade and craft stalls are available there, and you've been looking for people to fill those. Have they all been filled, or are there still some trade and craft stalls available if people want to take
still
part?
Some available.
But you'd want them to make contact with yourselves and to pre-book those, or...?
Yes, exactly.
In an ideal world, yeah. People, tickets will be on sale at the door. Obviously, they're on sale at the moment through various areas, but tickets will be on sale at the gate as well.
That's right. Basically, our event is Saturday and Sunday, the 24th, 25th. Gates open at 10 a.m. And basically, you pay at the gate. It's £10 or €10.
And that covers the whole weekend. It's not that's not a separate charge each day. That will.
It's a separate charge each day.
Oh, sorry, I do beg your pardon. Yeah, so it's separate. So you
can go Saturday or Sunday. That's for the public.
And is Saturday just a repeat of a Sunday, or are there different things happening on both days?
Well, there is different things happening, and one of the special highlights that we're bringing this year on the Sunday is lawnmower racing.
Right. Now, when you say, are you talking about right on? I'm assuming you mean right on lawnmowers. It's not just people pushing them.
No.
The pushing might be more fun, actually, now that I think about it.
It's the right on lawnmowers, but you take off the mowing deck and they're tweaked a bit. Right. So that's coming along on Sunday.
That would be interesting, actually. That would be very interesting. Eddie, listen, we wish you all the best with it. As we said, hopefully the weather will play ball. And Isabel, I know the hospice is going to benefit from this. And if people go, they're going to have a great weekend. They're going to have great experiences and see things they wouldn't normally see. And they'll also have that added satisfaction of knowing that they're supporting what is a very, very important park, a part of the fabric of life right across Donegal.
Thank you, Donal.
Isabel, thank you. And Eddie, thank you very much indeed as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome back to the 9 till noon show, and it's all action in the studios of Highland Radio, because we go back on camera and voila, Michael and Katie have rematerialised once again. So after that wonderful conversation with Eddie and Isabel, it's back to the entertainment hour on Highland, and we did promise we'd discuss Presumed Innocent, which is on Apple TV at the moment with Katie. You've put this up as one of your... clip picks this week. And Kitty, I remember there being a film called Presumed Innocent with Richard Gere way back late 80s, early to mid 90s, can't exactly remember when. This is, I presume, then a remake within that universe?
A remake within the universe, I believe, yeah. Now, I only discovered this sort of the night before last and started watching it. Now, when I'll be honest, it stars Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't like Jake Gyllenhaal.
Really?
I don't know what it is about him. I just find him very, I don't know. Like, you know, everyone used to call, oh God almighty, now I'm drawing a blank, Keanu Reeves very wooden. Oh. I find Jake Gyllenhaal, if Keanu Reeves is wooden, Jake Gyllenhaal's a tree. Do you know, like, he just, whatever it is about him. Anyway, so I started watching it the night before last, and I actually fell asleep. And I was like, no.
This recommendation gets more and more compelling.
but there is a but.
Yeah.
Myself and Jeremy started watching it again last night. We're a couple of episodes in, and actually, no, it is good. It is very, it's a good watch. So Jake Gyllenhaal obviously stars. It came out on Apple TV there in July of this year, so it's very new. And it also stars Bill Camp, who was in another program I reviewed there not so long ago, A Man in Full. He's also in A Sound of Freedom and a whole pile of other things. Peter Sarsgaard as well, from Our Orphan Flight Plan, and an actress called Nina Mensah, who's in another show I watch called New Amsterdam. So a really good cast. So it starts off with the murder of a prosecutor for the DA, and her body is found, and it kind of goes from there, and it talks about Jake Gyllenhaal's sort of professional relationship with her, and his possible other types of relationship that he might have had with her as well, in which kind of puts him in the spotlight as a suspect for her murder, and so basically it's a classic whodunit. what I like about it is the story's pretty good. Like as it's revealed, as things are revealed, they're revealed, I feel, at the right time. It's not, it's a little bit predictable, but it's not extremely predictable. And there's a few characters who could have done this.
Yeah.
With very good reason could have done this. And it's not throwing out red herrings left and right, as in it's not leading you down a million garden paths. It's very much focused on the one character, yet there's other characters in the periphery who absolutely could go in any direction. So I'm really enjoying that. I'm really enjoying it for that reason. And I like things that kind of make you think, or that you can get kind of stuck into. And this is definitely one of those shows that you get stuck into.
You mentioned New Amsterdam there, and you have that on your list as well. And I have to say, my wife Pauline and daughter Emer, both of those have started watching New Amsterdam now in the past week or so.
Yeah.
Largely because it was discussed here a week or two ago. And they're now both really enjoying that. Now they're saying it can be a bit heavy at times and a bit emotional at times. They're saying that New Amsterdam is a very big watch as well.
Yeah, it's kind of a cross between Eeyore and House MD. It kind of brings a bit of both, and it's a little bit lighter than House in terms of it's a little bit idealistic. Mm. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
But for something for like a different type of watch where you just want to kind of sit down and enjoy it, not take it too seriously in terms of, like, you know, how they're actually going about different things. It's a good watch anyway, and it's enjoyable.
Speaking about whodunits, and I'm going to make a very, very brief mention of this because I finished it during the week. I don't know if anyone watches a show called Death and Other Details on Disney. Really, really good program. It's on Disney, Death and Other Details, it's called. It's set, and Michael is going to be fascinated when I say this, it is set on a thing I would know an awful lot about because I spend so much time on them, and that is a cruise ship. And as Michael knows, I spend all my free time on cruise ships.
Allegedly.
Not elsewhere doing nefarious
Yes,
work. Absolutely
not. Ever since I watched The Night Agent, I've had questions.
Yeah.
We were told in The Night Agent that a couple of characters early on, your aunt and uncle, and they're always away on cruises and stuff, and then somebody was told, no, they were actually doing missions for the CIA. What they were. They weren't on cruises. And then I look on Facebook, and who do I see constantly putting up pictures, allegedly? Really?
Yeah,
really?
Absolutely. However, we won't go there. But no, Death and Other Details, it's on Disney. It stars one of my favourite actors, who's Mandy Patinkin, who I've always loved.
Yeah.
And still uttered my favourite 14 words in cinema, I think. Yes, they are the obvious 14 words.
Yes, for
the
of course they are.
Those words being, let's just get it out of the way. Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. I mean, you know, and he's really brilliant in this. He plays a private investigator who's investigating a murder, the murder of a young girl who has now grown up, and they're all thrown together on a ship which has been chartered by a billionaire for the purposes of a merger, and all sorts of nefarious things go on, and it's really, really good, and there's twists and turns. And it's got a really good twist toward the end, and I would recommend it to anyone. So,
and am I right in thinking, because I haven't seen this yet, but it does push some of the same buttons as Only Murders in the Building, isn't it? It's meant to be that sort of a light comedic.
Yeah, there are comedic elements too.
But now, a serious murder mystery.
I would say it's a bit more serious than I would liken it more to something like, if you look at the way they're doing, Kenneth Branagh's doing the remake of Agatha Christie's.
Okay.
Now, he's doing it in periods. So, I mean, you've got things like, especially the Murder in the Orient Express. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Branagh's doing it. Now, this is like Murder in the Orient Express, but it's modern day, and it doesn't have a moustache that looks like a dead hamster. But it would be closer to that. There is an element of comedy. Now, it's a very dark comedy.
Gotcha.
But is it as good as Only Murders? No.
Okay.
No, I would have to. Sorry, I love Only Murders.
Yeah, I do too.
Can't wait for a series.
Can't wait for it. I keep watching the trailers over and over.
I haven't watched the trailers.
I'm spoiling it delightfully. They're making me laugh so much. Yeah.
I avoid trailers for everything.
Oh, you're smart, yeah.
But no, that's really good. Death and Other Details. Katie, I'm going to stick with you because I'm going to go back to Michael for that 90s show in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
But a documentary that I think looks really fascinating, and it's Sprint. And especially now, so many of us have spent 3 weeks watching the Olympics.
Yeah.
This is really well timed.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of why I decided to put it in my list, because we watched it as well with really no expectation. It was kind of one of those ones where you're, oh, God, what will we watch? No, I can't think of anything. We'll just throw this on type of thing, you know. And it turns out that it's really exciting watching like high performance athletes train. Mm. Do you know? So it really is sprint. It's about sprint racers and athletes in the Olympics, and also other that prepare for other like very
prevalent competitions such as Diamond League, World Athletics Championships, and then the Olympic Games as well. So it talks about it shows a lot of their training, and I should mention that it does actually bring in different sprinters from around the world. So it focuses mainly on Jamaica, Britain, Italy, and the USA. And there's interviews then with Usain Bolt and Linford Christie as well, and they talk about like current athletes. So there's Zarnell Hughes, who competes for Britain, Marcel Jacobs for Italy. These are just a few that are that they follow. Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce from Jamaica, and also Sharika Jackson from Jamaica as well. So it's really interesting to see, you know, a few different things actually, like because how dedicated they are, and they're all of their life, you know, this to you kind of really appreciate the passion. Like, you know, my dear husband was watching some of them being interviewed, and he's like, God, they're real cocky, aren't they? And I was like, but this is the attitude of people who succeed. Like, nothing and no one is going to tell them that they can't do it. And I really like that, actually. I really like that they were just so, so focused. Like, I don't care who's in my way, what's in my way, I'm going to succeed at this. And then I suppose from a more like sports point of view, I also like really to watch how they bring off the starting board, like, and the shape of their feet, the position of their feet when they start running was crazy to me. I was like, oh my God, never knew they had to put their feet like ducks, like when they started. I was like, that's insane.
Oh, that'll be a huge part of the training.
Yeah. Like, and then, you know, like just to see how fast some of these people are, like straight off the bat. And then there's the failures and the strain on people's bodies and all of these different things. And, you know, the false starts and the mental effect of a false start or any kind of failure or you know, or anything like that. So all in all, like that, as we're just coming out of the Olympics, I did find it really interesting and fascinating, in fact, just all the different elements, not just necessarily from somebody in sport, but from somebody who is that passionate about something that they're involved in. And their mindset and that kind of thing. So I found it quite inspiring. And I also, it was very exciting to watch some of the races and that sort of thing. And to watch them train, it was really kind of quite, it'd get the blood pumping.
You wouldn't do, because if you look at the 100 metres, I mean, the difference between first and last might be no more than 0.4 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe the difference between winning and losing is possibly, you know, 2/10 of a second. Literally.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole point of training is to try and boost your best time by perhaps 3 or 4 tenths.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 or 4 tenths of a second. I mean, it's less than the blink of an eye.
Yes.
And that's the difference.
And they're talking then about like different athletes who have a weaker start, like the likes of, I think it was Usain Bolt, they said, didn't have a very good start ever. But then he had such a long stride that how quickly he was able to catch up, because they'd all be like about a foot ahead of him, and then he'd catch up and he would be gone and way ahead. I think Linford Christie was the same. So it was very interesting to kind of see that and see the different methods. Absolutely. And the different effects. No, it's 5 or 6 episodes long, and they're about 45 minutes each. And again, it's just inspiring. That's, for me, it's inspiring, and that's why I put it down.
One of the great things, and Netflix has done this with golf and with tennis as well, and perhaps most successfully, funnily enough, with the only sport that I would regularly watch, which is Formula One. And I mean, Drive to Survive has just become a classic. And it's interesting, and I've been watching Formula One since the 1990s. And I can tell you the difference Drive to Survive has made to Formula One is massive in terms of the way it promotes itself, the way it organises itself. You've now got a situation where Drive to Survive is actually having an impact on the management of Formula One, on the way teams look after themselves, on the way teams present themselves, on the way drivers behave. There is now what they call the Drive to Survive effect on Formula One. It really has made a difference. And this is an interesting one because, we've all watched the Olympics. And you're right, Katie. I mean, some of they were saying that too. I mean, when you listen to the commentators on either BBC or RTE or Eurosport or wherever, I mean, again, they're making those points that, you know, in the sprints especially, you know, the springboard to the first 60, and they were saying, well, he'll have a slow start, but he'll pick up after 75 metres. There's 25 metres to go, and they're going to pass out six people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the actual dynamics of how that happens, I mean, it's so fast. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that one, actually. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, that 90s show.
Mm.
There's nothing Michael likes more than a bit of retro, and we're going to have a 90s show. Just one or two comments before we go back to Michael and Katie. Caller says, happy Friday. I watched season one of 61st Street, a highly recommended TV show, tells the story of a young aspiring black student athlete that gets swept up in the Chicago criminal justice system. It's intertwined with corrupt cops and gangs, which puts it up there with The Wire. Powerful performances, and any reference to The Wire pricks my ears up, because if you're comparing something to The Wire, that is a very, very big thing to be comparing it with. You talked about Civil War being a great film. Caller says, sorry, Michael, have to agree. Civil War is up there, along with Napoleon, as being one of the most boring movies ever made. Defend yourself.
They could be right. I mean, different strokes, different. I'm not going to fight. I mean, I liked a lot about it, but I totally get it. Yeah, I mean, it's there was a lot of driving around waiting for stuff to happen. Mm. I was invested, but I can recognise not everyone's going to be completely invested in it, you know.
Yeah.
And I know, yeah, of course, different strokes, different folks.
That 90s show.
That 90s show, excuse me.
Bless you.
First off, new episodes are dropping today on Netflix, so it's very topical. We get 8 new episodes this weekend if you're already a fan. So that's good news. If you don't know what I'm talking about, that 70s show back 20 years ago was one of 25 years ago now, was one of the best sitcoms that Fox had in the late 90s, early noughties. One of my favorite comedies. Stands up really, really well on repeated viewings, and I do rewatch it. And it was about a bunch of kids growing up in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And one of them, was really obsessed with Star Wars. Eric Foreman was just absolutely obsessed with it. So we flash forward, Netflix decided early 2023 to do a sequel series with a lot of the main cast coming back, focusing on the children of those characters from the previous show. And Eric's daughter is called Leia, which makes a lot of sense. And we follow her and her group of friends as they hang around in the basement and basically do the same thing that the kids did in the 70s.
Yeah.
But now doing it 20 years later. The 70s show was massively funny, and it worked because there was a lot of pop culture references to the 1970s, which of course I got being of that age. But the 90s show is the same thing. I've totally blanked on the singer who was in the episode I watched during the week. But yeah, they have a lot of cameo appearances and references to stuff that was happening in the mid to late 1990s. Truth be told, it's not as funny as the original or as sharp, but critics are definitely saying that the second season, which dropped 8 episodes back in June or July, is a step up from the first season. And I just love it. It makes me laugh. I love the characters. Laura Prepon, who was Donna in the original series, is Donna in this series. Massive crush on her, and I just love seeing her in the show. And I note that the 8 episodes that are dropping today, this weekend, she directed all of them.
Oh, very
good. She's directing them. So she's stepping behind the camera as well as appearing as Leia's mother in the show. It's a very funny show. And I mean, Deborah Jo Rutt, Rupp, and Kurtwood Smith as Red. I mean, I think Red is up there with Al Bundy as one of the great TV dads. The guy who says what he thinks. It's not PC.
Yeah.
And you laugh and you think, so sometimes you kind of think, is he right? And he's brilliant as the dad now, he's the granddad, and he's fantastic. Well, he always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Always makes me laugh. Love that
married
guy.
Married with children, have to say, absolutely brilliant. Any comparison with Al Bundy, that is a recommendation. Callers just told us, as you discovered, Michael, but unlike you, Michael, the caller didn't need to resort to their phone. Harrison Ford was in, presumed.
Yeah.
So says the caller. Thank you very much indeed. Good morning to Donal and the crew. Three of the shows we're looking forward to see. Oh, by the way, Donal and Michael, caller says, I see the recent Doctor Who has just landed on the RTE player. And if anyone hasn't watched those episodes, and they were great episodes,
watch them.
They are fantastic.
But that's fantastic. We knew the specials were there. Yeah. We didn't know the regular episodes.
Well,
the
regular episodes have just dropped, apparently. Have you seen The Company You Keep on Alibi? Now, it's a drama series. Milo Ventimiglia is one of the stars.
Oh.
I remember him from Heroes. Yes. Which was a program yes. I loved. At the,
yeah, I could
the,
never get yeah. into it, but I remember him very
oh,
well.
Oh, I really
yeah.
loved Heroes. Yeah. I really loved Heroes. Sarah Wayne Collins is in it as well. Oh, sorry, Sarah Wayne Callies.
From Prison Break.
Yeah.
Charismatic con man Charlie Nicoletti sparks an immediate attraction to Emma Hill, who's blissfully unaware that she is in fact an undercover CIA agent. Also, they're replaying A Con Too Far to an Irish-American, and Cliffs of Moher is briefly in episode two, Miftis, not Schlieve League. It's a slick show, but The Fear is a good show, and The Fear, sorry, is a good show. It could be canned before you get to it, so if you get a chance to watch The Fear, which I haven't done, it is there and available. Going to go back to yourself, Katie. The Union on Netflix, and it stars one of my absolute all-time favourite actors, and that's J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, he's
watched Oz. I loved Oz, that prison series. That
so
he
good.
Was in, and he was amazing.
He was
in Oz.
He was played, serious.
He played the head of the Nazis.
Have you seen him in Whiplash?
Oh, Whiplash! Absolutely fabulous. Fantastic.
He really
I mean, and in fact, in Whiplash, there's an evilness to him, yep. particularly at the end when he just turns around, and he says to Miles Teller and goes, "Caravan."
Yeah.
And, you know, having got him to prepare something else, and the look on Teller's face when they have this battle of wills, and just the cinematography at the end of Whiplash is just, the drumming is great, the cinematography is great, and I'm sure people whose husbands are drummers will find it particularly interesting.
Yes, indeed. And interestingly, I didn't watch it with my husband.
So. All right.
But you mentioned Oz as well. I mean, yes, I loved Oz at the time. But what I loved about watching him in Oz, J.K. Simmons, when he was doing Oz, he was also recurring on the Law and Order shows.
Yeah.
He was appearing on more than one as a friendly, understanding, empathetic psychologist who would appear and testify. Yeah. And you were seeing this guy who was going from what he was doing in Oz to playing 180 degrees the opposite. Such an actor.
Oh, yeah. Well, great. He's also plays one of the funniest scenes in one of my top 10 films of all time, which is a film not an awful lot of people have seen. It's probably a cult classic, but it's got a huge rake of stars in it. It's a film called Burn After Reading.
Oh, I've heard of it. Yeah.
Burn After Reading. Simmons is in it. Yeah. You've got George Clooney. You've got Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. You've got Frances McDormand. You've got a rake of other stars. It's a Coen Brothers film. It is brilliant. If you get a chance, Burn After Reading. It is just one of the most amazing films. Certainly one of my top 10 of all time. So if there's one recommendation I give you. And I'm amazed I've mentioned the film you haven't heard of, Michael. I tell you, if you know, and I know you have all your watching planned up until about 2029.
Yeah.
But if you get a chance to squeeze in a film called Burn After Reading,
I've written down three things today. Yeah. So yeah, that's on the list as well. I'll give it a shot too.
But however, before time beats us, Katie, Union.
This won't take me very long because I tell you, as great and all as J.K. Simmons is, and how much I love Mark Wahlberg, this, my friends, is a heap.
No.
But really entertaining.
It's not very in it.
Yeah.
I was reading about this morning. Yeah.
He is this like childhood friend of hers. She's this secret agent who like you know is trying to retrieve government documents that go missing in a something that went wrong or whatever. So she brings in Mark Wahlberg, who's her childhood friend, also a construction worker. So he's like a nobody, and it's like, what? You thought of your friend from 20 years ago from school to come and join you on this espionage, on this, you know, kind of thing. And
is so she good in it?
Listen, she's Halle Berry. You know, I don't happen to think that she's very good in. I think the only film I've seen her that she's actually good in is Monster. But other than that, I don't find her great. But it's entertaining. So long as you have no expectations of any sense of reality or normality or anything that is actually going to happen, and don't ask any questions.
That's half the stuff you watch on TV, in fairness. I mean, if not
I
more.
Know,
that was the premise of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. when it started. I've been rewatching the first season of that. Every episode was about bringing an ordinary person into the world of espionage. Yeah. That's how it started,
Well, it's just, you know, and then half of the scenes, like Mark Wahlberg has his top off, and, you know, like it's like trying to get that draw of him having this body and, you know, like, and it's like, God, it's hilariously bad.
It's almost like it's almost as bad as like snakes on a plane bad. Do you know what I mean? But it, but again,
but you see, the problem
that,
here is snakes on a plane bad. Snakes on a plane is actually brilliant because it's so bad.
So yes, bad.
I mean,
yeah,
so what you're saying is it's bad, but not moving kind of into so bad it's brilliant territory.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. It's I think it's trying to be something of more of like an action, a serious action movie, which kind of makes it a little bit sad. But having said that. Having said that, when you're sitting there on Friday evening, potentially with, you know, your crisps and whatever it is, in front of the TV, that it, in context, it probably would be something that you'd enjoy in under the right circumstances. But it's ridiculous, but it's all right.
It is not going to, in any way, enlighten us on the meaning of life or enrich us in a philosophical manner.
I don't think you'd be quoting it.
No,
that way.
But if you're looking, if we are looking for 2 hours of mind-numbing check your brain at the door entertainment, this might be just the place.
That's the one. And I always like to throw in at least one of those in my reviews.
Oh,
like, you know, it's something just a little bit silly, something that makes you smile.
Sometimes, you're right, Katie. Yeah. Sometimes on a Friday night, that's what's demanded.
It is what you need. I was reading up on that this morning, not maybe with a view to watching it tonight, but I was like, actually, I like him usually.
I'll tell you an interesting one. Mark Wahlberg, you mentioned him there. His family have a fast food chain. And when we were on a layover in Boston on our way home from the US after being on a holiday, we had a layover in Boston and we had our lunch in a burger joint called Wahlburgers. Which is owned by Mark and the family. Michael, Katie, pleasure as always. It's been wonderful. The time on Highland Radio, 2:58, which means time has beaten us. Thank you to all our contributors on the show today. Thank you so much to Shannon and to Caroline for taking your calls. Caroline produces. Well, of course, thanks most importantly to you for listening. John Breslin's up next around the Northwest. Before that, headlines with Michaela. But from myself, Donal Kavanagh, I've really enjoyed the week. Thank you very much indeed for everything and have a great day.